podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to the Midweek Fix with the LFC Day Trippers. Packed show to get through tonight, I'm going to be honest, an absolute packed show. Spoiler alert, the winners and losers are amazing. They really, really are. I'm so looking forward to them. But we're going to look at manager turnover. Three managers sacked in the first 10 games of the Premier League season, with possibly more to follow. More than likely, some more to follow. We're going to have a little chat around Liverpool's midfield because the injuries keep coming and then going and then coming again. And Atleti at Anfield, we're going to try to pick a team for that. And we're going to chat around loads of stuff. But I promise you, the winners and losers are absolute, they're absolute crackers. They really, really are. With me this week, we have got Keith Plunkett, we have Shawnee Lawson, and we have Colin Doherty from the Villa podcast. Delighted to have him back, because if he's nothing else, he's very straight talking, so that'll go down very well. Lads are all very, very welcome, and the first thing we're going to go to is that manager turnover, because Watford have sacked the manager, Newcastle have sacked the manager, and Spurs have sacked the manager, and you know, there's an awful lot of talk around Ole Gunnar Solskjaer at the moment. You also have the fact that the Norwich manager still has a job. How he does is beyond me. And I'm sure in the next 5 to 6 or 10 league games, we're going to see another few chopped as well. Colin, I'm going to come to you first, because you know, the Newcastle one, fair enough, they've taken over, they've been taken over, they're going to look for a manager and stuff like that. The Watford one seemed a bit strange, and in particular then the Spurs one. I don't think that guy stood a chance from day one.
No, like I think Jamie Carragher put it really well, didn't he, when he said it's not even a bad sacking, it's a bad appointment. But I think it sort of just is emblematic of the mess that is Spurs. Like, they brought in somebody that they don't want. I don't know where the idea of Spurs attacking football came from either. Like, we all just say this about every team, don't we? Like, their brand of football is attacking, that's the Spurs DNA, you know. But their owner got rid of Pochettino, like the best manager that they've probably had in 3 decades. Brought in Jose Mourinho because he's a winner, didn't win, and now he brought in Nuno Espirito Santo, who we've probably had conversations here before about the Wolves team, and we actually definitely did last year where we were talking about predictions and how boring the Wolves team were, and he brought him in as well. It just goes to show the Spurs aren't really. The only thing Daniel Levy is sure to do more than anything is look for a bargain. The fact that he went down 6 places to this guy just to save himself a bit of money, and of course cost himself a bit of money in the long run, just sums him up.
It really does. Keith, I think you heard a switch on your mic before you come on here. You might want to re-switch it, because it's picking up everything you're doing there. Literally, you're tapping on the table and it's picking up everything.
It wasn't tapping.
Well, listen, that's your own business. But Keith, I come to you. You know, he doesn't stand a chance, because I was looking back at it earlier and, you know, Conte was in for it. Gattuso was in for it. Fonseca was in for it. There might have been a couple more. I'm not too sure.
There was Pochettino was in for it.
Oh, yeah. But Pochettino apparently was leaving the PSG to come back. That was the first one actually to come out, wasn't it? Yeah. And then he goes with Espirito Santo and he turns up. And, you know, the first thing he's to deal with is Harry Kane not wanting to be at the club. And then you go through the summer and everything is all around him and you can see it affecting him. But Colin's right, isn't it? The style of football was never going to wash at Spurs. Never going to wash at Spurs.
No, and I think Nuno was a coach who, he landed in nearly the perfect situation going to Wolves at the time, because you had the Mendes connection there at Wolves. So he was being given all these Portuguese talents that otherwise wouldn't have been landing on Wolves' door. You know, you're getting Ruben Neves, who was captain in Porto, the youngest captain in the Champions League history at that stage. You've got João Moutinho, all these guys that would have been well out of reach of Wolves in general. And he got there, Portuguese, and he just sort of guided them, settled on a system, done well, low expectations. When you're at a club like Wolves, and I'm not just playing up to Conan here, but even like Villa are new, promoted in the last few years, but they're one of the biggest clubs in England, and there is an expectation at a club like Villa, like Leeds. Wolves don't have that. And then you go to Spurs, and from the off, you're on the back foot because you're right. You're the fifth or sixth choice manager to go in there. You're the only one that seems willing to take it. And why are you the only one willing to take it? Why is no one else taking that job? So he was on to a bad start, no matter what happened. And then you throw in the Kane stuff, and there's discontent all over the place. The squad isn't happy. You've got even Kane is. There's murmurs of Kane being unsettled. Well, not murmurs of Kane. Sorry, Kane's coming out saying he's on his way. But then you've even Son, little murmurs of Son being unhappy. And you're like, what can you do there if you don't have the support? You don't have the players behind you from the start. You're never going to do it. The expectation was too high. Three wins in the first three games, three scuttery 1-0s. Do you know what I mean? They weren't. They bet City on the first day, was it?
Yeah,
they
beat
City
on the first day. Yeah.
They weren't impressive. That's the thing. They were 3-1-0s, and you're looking at them and you're like, you know, they're top of the league here, but they're not really impressing anybody. And I think it gave a false sense of security nearly for Nuno. And it just started to unravel. He played a system that, he had a system at Wolves that was very specific, and he had the players to do it. And he goes to Spurs and he never really stamped his authority on the team, in my opinion. And if you're not a big enough manager to go in and sort out Harry Kane under them circumstances, I don't think you have a chance. Now they've gone for another manager who's the other end of the spectrum, and it'll be interesting to see what happens there. But I just think Nuno, from the very start, we said it in the summer, you know, it was a desperate move. It was never the right move for either party, and it's turned out to be a bit of a disaster.
Really hard. Shani, you know, I think we all agreed that it wasn't a great appointment, and he didn't stand much of a chance. But what's changed, Shani, with Spurs? Because Conte, 4 months ago, was approached.
Nothing.
Yeah, but this is what I'm saying. Something has changed, because he was approached 4 months ago, and the talk was that he wasn't committing to it because, I presume, money, because he loves his money to spend. Are Spurs come back to him and persuaded him by saying, we will give you money? What do you think's going on there?
The biggest myth that perpetuates Conte is this, him wanting to go in there and demand the millions wherever he goes. It's actually the complete opposite of his style. Because I remember he done an interview with Thierry Henry when he took over Chelsea. And the first thing he asked for Chelsea was for to put a bed in the training ground for himself. Because he was going to sleep there overnight and work on everything that he had there and coach the players that he had available to the best visibility. And you look what he does when he goes to Inter, and he's making, he brings Ashley Young over to Inter and plays Victor Moses wing back at Chelsea, and he goes on to win the league room. So he is the type of fella who can work with what he has got there. Now, there is always a bit of friction between him and the boards, but the only thing that happened, Gav, was Levy saw his fucking ass, because he literally had to pay Espirito Santo £12 million for 4 months' work. And that would have killed him to do that.
Yeah.
Because that's what he's all about, is the coin. It's all about pinching pennies and the coin. And nothing has changed, Gav. And the reason why I can tell you nothing has changed was because they signed Conte today on an 18-month deal. What's the story with that?
With an option to extend.
With an option to extend, me bollocks. Just give him the 3 out of 4 years. Even then, that way, it even makes it look like that you have some sort of belief that this fella is going to implement something over 3 or 4 years. What can any manager do over 18 months?
Now, the first 6 months are right off, isn't it? Like, that's not going to do
that. Tuchel walks in and wins with Chelsea, right, fair enough, but he literally stunk the gaff out. They nearly ended up outside the top four on the last day of the season. And this is the thing with football that people don't realise, is how fine the margins is between being a winner or deemed as a loser. You look at what's happened to Spurs. 3 years ago, they're in the Champions League final. The perennial title challengers in England, they're pushing all the time under Pochettino. They lose that final, and it's shit or get off the pot for Spurs after that season. And what did they do? They did fuck all, and the team went stale, and they ran Poch out after 3 months of a season where he brings them to a Champions League final, closest they've ever been to winning anything. And to forward what Conan says, this idea of Spurs playing attack of footballers and wanting winners in that team, they've never had winners in that team. Where's this entitlement come from? They've won fucking nothing. They've won one Carling Cup under Levy's tenure. So nothing has changed, Cap. It's pure scattergun by Tottenham. It's 100% scattergun. And I would not be at all surprised if Conte is gone come May. Because it seems to be that making it up as they go along. They literally interviewed, Nuno was one of the first fellas, I was listening to it today on TalkSport, Nuno was one of the first fellas that was interviewed for that sports job. He effectively ended up being seventh choice. They wouldn't pay Fonseca out because he had a clause to do with tax that gave him an exemption in Roma or wherever he managed beforehand. It's pure scattergun by sports. They've literally been burned by every single bit of business that they did or didn't do in the summer. Oye, which I'll go on to later in my section with Harry Kane and then the managerial appointments. They're a fucking mess, Gav. They're an absolute mess. Only for the new shiny new stadium. They are in big bother. But I will say one thing. It's proactive from Levy, which he normally always is. And if you're looking at the table now, if Conte is as good as they say they are, and if some of these players are as good in the sports squad that people say they are, then they should be looking at top four because it's wide open. It's wide open. I watched United again tonight. They are muck. Leicester have been shy for large parts of this season. They're getting away with it, I think. And Arsenal are coming on. So there is a real... The door is open for fourth spot. And what would tell you that more than anything is that a lot of people have West Ham as favourites to nick on that form, fourth spot.
It's mad. Dylan O'Rourke says 18-month deal leaves drama in 6 months' time. And there's one here as well from Jonathan that I think is a great point. And I'm going to put it up on screen for you now when I start my fingers out and press the right buttons. It says, I think it's a desperate attempt by Levy to get into the Champions League this season. They're broke. They desperately need that Champions League. And I think there's something to that because an 18-month deal with an option to extend, no one's telling us who has that option. Is it the club or is it the manager? And I think it's a case of we'll write this 6 months off or hope that you can get us in there. But I could see a situation where they don't make the Champions League, he stays, and he has a rocky August, September, and he's gone. And it reduces the amount of payment that's to be made to him. Colin, just last thing on this. Do you see him being a success of sports? Or is it a case of these players just literally down tills for the last year, and it'll actually show them up if they start playing again?
There's definitely a bit of that, but like these players, they're not that good either. Like that's the thing. Like the entitlement for Levy, maybe it just shows he doesn't know that much about football that he thinks that he can make a scramble here, having written off the first 10 games of the season. We could still get into the Champions League with the right man. Like their squad is nowhere near those top four teams, and then you should mention West Ham, Leicester, whoever else. Like they're already behind. It's like Conte, like. Sean is right. Conte's obviously a class manager, so he would get it right with time and with a bit of investment as well. But to think that suddenly, like, we're all laughing at United. Like, United's squad is, like, nowhere near Spurs' level. Like, so that's something else to tap into. And the only thing I wonder about the 18 months is, does it suit Conte a little bit as well when United finally come around to their senses, get rid of Solskjaer, then Conte's got an easier way out of this job at Spurs and get into a better one?
It's a mad one. Huge news coming from Dylan O'Rourke, Gaff. He says, moved house recently, lads, watching you in HD on a 64-inch telly. He said, it's better than Babe Station. So there you go.
If you'd have said, Dylan, you should have told us earlier.
We would have worn these clothes. But look, The stuff around managers going, just quickly.
Before we move off Conte, yeah. Another thing with Conte is he plays a certain system. So he's not going to go into Spurs and it's not going to be 4-4-2 or whatever, 4-3-3, whatever they used to play. And so he's going to implement everywhere he goes, he plays three at the back.
Yeah.
And it will be interesting to see if he does that. Now, Spurs have a lot of centre-backs. They've got a natural, Reguilón can play left wing-back and they've got the Irish fella Doherty can play, not Conan, the other one, can play
Matt.
The right wing back. He hasn't done that in that Spurs yet, in fairness. He hasn't been great, but he might be one that can thrive in that you know, wing back system at under Conte. But it could take them a while to get used to this system. Do you know what I mean? So it's putting more pressure on that 18-month deal and more pressure on, as Shawnee said, the 6 months that he might be gone in. Do you know what I mean?
That's the big crux of it for me. I just, because I thought that's a brilliant appointment, but like you kind of just have to put your money where your mouth is, and that's saying, look, I'm going to give you the 4 or 5 year deal, knowing that I might have to fucking pay you if it does go tits up. But yeah, that's shown that you do envisage this being a long term thing, but they obviously haven't got the bleeding courage or their own convictions to give him the deal that he probably deserves, because he's a top 5 manager in the world. There's absolutely no doubt about it in my mind.
There could be something there, Shawnee, where they say to him, though, you know, on the other side of it, like Lucas says there, he's an absolutely brilliant manager. Why are you writing him off? We're not writing him off as a manager. We're just looking at the fit at Spurs and the length of the deal. There could be something in it where they say 18 months and something triggers an extension, i.e. a Champions League qualification, and will probably then trigger funds to be released in order to sign players and then look to build on it in that, you know, second 12 months of that 18-month deal, and then they see where they go from there. But it's an interesting one. Lads, there's definitely going to be other managers coming and going and stuff like that in the Premier League, but just to put you on the spot for the crack, Shawnee, next manager to be sacked in the Premier League for you?
I think it's going to be Dean Smith.
Okay, lovely. That'll fucking go down well in the Conan household. Conan,
Conan probably agrees with me.
Yeah, I was going to say, do you back Shawnee up there?
Yeah, I think, it's going to be pretty close to, like, it could well be, because the thing is, like, a lot of Villa fans are looking at Villa's next 3 games, and everyone's like, if we don't get 9 points there, then forget about it. But, like, we're away to Southampton and away to Crystal Palace and at home to Brighton. Like, Villa got 7 points in a normal season against those teams, you'd be fucking laughing. Like, you know, so this idea that Dean Smith has to get 9 points in those 3 games to save his job off the back of how they're playing is very worrying. I thought Villa might be patient with him, but now I'm already seeing links of Fonseca and stuff like that. I thought Farke might have been the first manager to get sacked. It still might be, or the next manager, but Norwich seemed content enough just to go up and down. So, look, this is my roundabout politician's way of saying that it probably is going to be Dean Smith. But I hope we get it right, because like the only thing about Dean Smith is that if I saw Villa's Conte out there, if there was just an obvious replacement, like which was an obvious upgrade, then I would say, right, let's go and do it. But I think like there's not, and I think he can get it right, but I don't know if there's going to be a lot of patience out there.
Okay, Keith.
Yeah, I have a few. I'm down to two. I was going to say Ranieri, but no. Farke isn't going to do it. He must have nodes on Delia Smith at this stage that he's given that job. But I think it's going to be either Rafa or Bielsa, and I'm going to go for Rafa.
Okay. I disagree. I don't think Everton are in a position to pay off Rafa. And I don't think, and look, a bit like Conan said with Villa, I don't know what their upgrade is. I don't know what their solution is, because there's no way that Rafa was their first choice. And I think they trawled looking for people. They could have had Nuno Espirito Santo. He was on the verge of Everton, if you believe media, during the summer, and then ends up at Spurs, and Rafa ends up at Everton. I think it's Ole Gunnar Solskjaer.
I know
Shawnee is going to disagree profusely with me on that, but they've got out of jail tonight. They've got a draw. Yeah, I think if he loses the derby, he's gone.
Gab, I'll tell you why he's not. You look at every single United manager since Ferguson's gone, right?
Yeah.
Every one of them. Okay. Moyes, they lose away at Goodison. Top four becomes an impossibility. Gone. Sacked. Contractual obligation. Gone. Out the door. With no severance, no nothing. These all have this written into their contracts. This is the way the Glazers are. They're box tickers. So as soon as they can't tick the boxes anymore, they will get rid of him. That's the way it is with him. You seen what your man came out today, Gav, who's close ties to the club, and said, the club told Conte's entourage, we actually don't want them because we're afraid he might actually challenge the hierarchy there. And that's not what they want. Like you made a point is that they want another yes man.
Yeah, I do believe that. What,
they'll wait for that. They won't sack Ole, Gav, because at the end of the day, the fans will never get toxic towards him because of what he's done for the club. It'll always be kind of, you can see the fans do sing his name, and I mean Leeds fans, Liverpool fans, fucking every other fans are singing his name at the moment, but I don't think they go near them. And for the same thing with Farc, I don't think Farc is under any trouble at all, because I actually think
that's their Ailey Smith,
he goes on gardening leave every time he gets up to the Premier League. They know he's
going to hold on to him being when paid.
He doesn't even get paid.
He might be on the PUP payment, is he?
It's like a football manager when you just click go on a holiday.
Yeah.
As soon as he gets back up to the Premier League, he just goes on a holiday for 9 months and says, I'll be back in the Championship, I'll get just back up.
she probably tells him, listen, we're in the Premier League now, you need to go to the doctor and get a note to say you have COVID, long COVID, because you're not getting paid between fucking August and May, because you're not worth it, but you can stay where you are. That's what's probably going on.
Go back in the Championship, down Europe.
I get where you're coming from with regards to Solskjaer, and to be honest with you might be right. There's a good chance you might be right. My only thinking on it is, and Sean, it's a great point you make with regards to what's written into the contract and stuff like that, right? You know, if you don't get a Champions League spot, we've every right to sack you. I understand that. But they've dodged the bullet tonight. They were hammered by Liverpool at home. And I think if they get hammered in the derby, I think he'd be gone. I think they'll have to look at the sway of the supporters. Now, I know what you're saying about man.
The same what Conan said. Who are they going to get?
I think Brendan Rodgers' name is written all over.
Yeah. So yes, Brendan Rodgers, do you think he'll jump before Christmas, the United to Leicester?
Yeah, 100%. If Brendan Rodgers was out and out offered the Arsenal, Spurs, Chelsea, United, Liverpool, City job, they wouldn't see him for dust at Leicester. I'm telling you that now. Brendan Rodgers is not like Brendan Rodgers had a job at Celtic where he could have went down as the best manager in their history, right? But he's winning 10 leagues in a row. And he would have done it if he'd have stayed there, right? And he walked away for Leicester City. Now, I know it's a Premier League job, but he could have went down as the best manager they've ever seen at Celtic Park, which is a monstrous club with huge names in it. And he walked away. I promise you. Do you remember the time Arsenal were looking for when they sacked Emery? And he was literally on the telly nearly telling people he wanted to go to Arsenal. In an interview after Leicester game, he is the perfect man for Manchester United, because I'll tell you why, he won't rock a boat and he will love nothing more than go into press conferences 8 days a week and tell you about the size of the club, the character, the prestige and stuff like that, and they'll all love that. I'm telling you now Brendan would 100% walk, but I absolutely take your point on Solskjaer, he could stay, but a bashing in the derby and I think he's in massive trouble. Massive trouble. But look, it's one for another day, probably tomorrow or the next day, the way things are fucking going. But it's definitely something there. Now, I want to move on to the midfield situation at Liverpool. Now, people are probably looking, going, what's Conan going to say about this? He'll have a view. I know he will. because the injuries keep coming and going, as we know. Naby Keita is the latest to be out for a while, is the word from the club, because of a hamstring injury. You've got James Milner out with a hamstring injury. You've got, looks good on Harvey Elliott though. He's hopping on mats and stuff like that, so he looks like he's on his way back. Thiago is in contention and so is Fabinho. And things are starting to move in the right direction, but it's two steps forward, one step back. And the reason I'm bringing this up is because we were in Liverpool at the weekend, myself and Shawnee and Andy, and we were having a discussion on Sunday afternoon about Liverpool's midfield. And I'm going to leave Shawnee to last and let the other lads say what you think, but Keith, I'll come to you first. What's going on now? Now, this isn't knee-jerk stuff like sell him, buy him, sell. It's not that. Does what happened is what's going on this season nearly confirm that we need to shuffle this midfield a little bit more? A necessity. What's going on now? One out, two come back, one goes out. Do we need to look for more reliability in this midfield? And has the last couple of weeks with people in and out confirmed that?
Yeah, I sort of understand the reaction when you lose players, especially after what happened last season around defenders and things like that. But I just think, Liverpool, I said this yesterday in our chat, Liverpool could sign the most reliable player in the world, and after a couple of months in their system, they could be picking up knocks and hamstrings all over the place. People always say this about Klopp and his methods. It puts a lot of strain, especially on midfield players. Now, I know Genie never got injured. It's not going to happen to every single player, but you know, there's a lot of, you could sign a reliable player. We brought Harvey Elliott into the first team this year and put him in midfield, and it shocked all of us. None of us were expecting that to happen, and Harvey goes down then with a bad injury. Naby is Naby, and the fact we've got till now out of him is positive. Do you know what I mean? Right, we lose him, but it's positive enough. The other guys are all picking up knocks. Like Fabinho wasn't an injury concern before he came to Liverpool. Do you know what I mean? Like it's when they're coming in, they're starting to drop. And I don't know if it's down to the methods or, you know, the personnel themselves. It's a hard one. But at the end of the day, I think the one thing we say about this Liverpool team, and I compare Klopp's Liverpool to Ferguson's United team around 08 when they had Tevez, Rooney, Ronaldo up front. They had Vidic, Ferdinand. Yeah, and Berbatov. They had Vidic, Ferdinand, Evra, and Neville at the back. And their midfield was bleeding Corley Watts out of Coronation Street, Park Ji-sung, Mick Hucknall, and someone else. Do you know what I mean? They had all these jobbers in midfield. And they just built everything else around them. And they got functional players. I'm only joking. I think Owen Hargreaves was probably playing for them back then. And John O'Shea was playing. Fletcher. All these fellas were playing. And they were key players, but they weren't. You know, it wasn't like a set midfield. Raphael was playing there. Do you know what I mean? Like, there was loads of them. And they were all coming in and doing bits and pieces. And I see this Liverpool team nearly like that.
They wheeled Paul's goals out of his daughter's wash basket and all won the season.
Yeah, that's true, yeah. And how they done that was beyond me. But, you know, they did. They got Paul's goals back. And it was all just a case of give us the bodies that can play the system there. And I think Liverpool are quite similar. Where we're panicking about this is when we see Oxlade-Chamberlain in the team alongside Curtis Jones and then Hendo. You know, that three, out of all the permutations we can have, out of all the bodies in there, that's probably the least trio that you'd want to see from a Liverpool point of view. Because, well, Curtis Jones, I'm a huge fan of Curtis Jones. I think he's very good. I think he's improving every time he plays. But when you have Oxlade-Chamberlain in there as well, I think there's too much getting asked of Curtis Jones in the games when Ox is there, because he's not able to do what he could do. And I think it just puts a strain on everyone else. I think if you get Fabinho back in there and Thiago back into contention, I think the midfield is fine. But do we need to get more reliable players? Possibly, but then you can never tell what happens with them. You know, they pick up a bad injury, or they pick up a strain, or they pick up this or that. You just have to go with what you have. I just think it's very similar to the United team around that way, and it's put who you can in there and build the rest. Whereas last season we lost the defence, the heart of the defence, and we crumbled to shite. The midfielders were having to play there. Everything went pear-shaped. This year, I think, you know, we're not doing too bad. You know, we moan a lot about, you know, where we are and the squad, but we're doing okay. If we just get through this period and we can get one or two bodies back in there, and we'd see how long Naby is out for, a while. Sean, he'll tell you that could be Christmas 2023 by the time we see him. But what we have now is two players coming back in and possibly another one close enough. So, look, it's not ideal that we're playing Atletico Madrid tomorrow and they're absolute dogs. But if we get one of the lads back, Fabinho or Thiago for that, I think we should be okay.
Yeah. Like, I'm not moaning about anything. We're 3 points off the top of the league. We win tomorrow night and we're through in the Champions League group with two to go. We've a League Cup we're still in and going for. And the FA Cup comes in January. But
oil mounted.
Oh, no, you go last now in a second. I'm building up to you. Conan, when you look at Liverpool and you know you're a big fan of Liverpool, how they play, their manager, the style, the stuff like that. When you look at that midfield and you see the midfield problems you have, is from the outside, do you look at it and go, why don't they just get rid of A and B and bring in C and D and like no one will touch them? Well, because my thing is like, and I'm not moaning about it. I'm just looking at going, we're persevering with something here now and we're not really fixing it, you know, the sort of way. But for me, I feel like something needs to be fixed.
Well, it's funny, like, because for me, the answer is always just like get Fabinho back in and then everything just sort of works from there. Like, I look at Villa as an example, and it's not a good comparison, but like Villa just for 3 years now have had such trouble in midfield, and we've just been crying out for a Fabinho. at Villa's level just to command. And I don't mean like, I really sort of like now, you know, with the years gone by, people almost disrespect Roy Keane. Like, they just think he's a breaker. Roy Keane was a proper footballer, like, got his foot in the ball, turned, picked passes. Like, that's what Fabinho does when people are under pressure. Like, you know, he forces teams back by the way he plays. He's a brick wall in defence, but then that brick wall moves up the pitch, you know, gradually, and then just pens a team in. And that's what a proper centre midfielder does. So in a way, like, when Keith's talking there, like, the big, you touched on it there, Keith, when you said Curtis Jones and Oxlade-Chamberlain, like, that's just for me as an outsider thinking, right, I always thought the ask was simple, like, and it's really not as simple. You're asking a lot of them, but I thought the three midfielders run 12K, cover for the fullbacks, and one of you get forward and break the lines and show a bit of creativity, but there's only going to be one of you doing that. And I thought with Oxlade-Chamberlain and Curtis Jones, that's what they're both going to be trying to do. And they're just both also not in that same mold as well. Henderson and Fabinho are obviously the dream two to have in there with any three. So I don't know. Like, I honestly do think it's just a Fabinho thing. And the reason I brought in Villa is because, like, I know John McGinn gets linked to Liverpool sometimes, and we would always be like, well, what the fuck is that about? Because, like, he's not that good for Villa, but we love him as well. So then you're like, right, let's just take a step back from how we're playing at the minute. And would it be different if Marvelous Nakamba wasn't alongside him? And the answer is yes. So, like, we started to think, you know what, if you drop John McGinn into Liverpool's team, he'd probably just easily play at that level then because of the system. And again, because it comes back from Fabinho and it starts with that. But I suppose to sum up, and again, you both have touched on it, and I'll probably tee up Shawnee here, is maybe I'm cranky now because I'm watching too much Aston Villa at the minute, but and I'm seeing a lot of Liverpool Twitter. I go on there just to sort of get a reprieve from Villa Twitter, and it's chaos there sometimes. Like, it was chaos in the summer with FSG. It's chaos when you're not signing people, and I think it always comes back to the fact that the bar was raised so highly, and like, in Liverpool's heads, they have to hit 100 points. They have to hit 100 points, and like, if they drop a point, they're fucked. Like, Liverpool's played 15 games this season. They've won 11 and drawn 4. Fuck off if you're complaining to me about that. And, like, you know, but that's the thing. Like, you draw with Brighton, I understand it's annoying, you were 2-0 up, so, like, that's always going to be annoying, but, like, yeah, you're not going to win every game. And I looked at the points per game, and at the minute, Liverpool are on track for 84, but that's having played City, Chelsea and United. So, like, realistically, it's probably 87. If Liverpool don't win the league of 87 points, then, you know, fuck the league. Like, you know, that's a good points tally that you should be aiming for every season anyway. It's going to be something special that beats it. And so I would think that it's going well, but I assume Shawnee thinks the wheels are coming off somewhere along the way.
Kieran Thorne with a super chat. He says, people moaning about the midfield against Brighton, but the fact the backup midfielders have contributed in moments this season. Ox with assists, Kate with goals. They have contributed, and this isn't a performance based thing. I'm looking at. I'm just looking at the ins and outs and the consistent kind of the consistent kind of when's he back, and yeah, you know, you get injuries and stuff like that. But this just seems to be a recurring team, and I'm not like, listen, I said it at the start of the season. We have that squad. I think we win the league. I'm still on that boat, but I'm just, it's just something that's in my mind is creeping in, going, this looks like it's compounding itself now constantly. Shawnee, the floor is yours.
Gav, we did countless shows leading up to the season, and the big concern for everyone was three defenders coming back from long-term injuries. And I put my hand up on shows and said, I'm actually not worried at all about that, because with today's football, the way it's gone, these long-term injuries aren't half as bad as they used to be. They don't seem to be any reoccurrence. It's become less likely now in the game. And I did say that the midfield for me was an issue, because the fact of the matter is, and this can't be denied, we'd had, and I'm excluding Elliot from this, because as Keith said, that was sort of like finding a bleeding fiver in your jacket pocket after a few weeks being a night out. That was just something we didn't expect to happen. That happened, and you're like, oh, well, this is nice. So it was unfortunate that he got injured. But if you actually look at the makeup of our midfield, and I'm being honest here, right? Jordan Henderson, last 2 or 3 years, misses large chunks of the season. Fabinho, last 2 seasons, has missed large chunks of seasons. He has, no doubt about it, even the 18-19 season. James Milner, he's 67 years old, completely understandable. that's going to happen with him, right? Utility player, that's grand. Thiago, throughout even his time at Bayern Munich, he was injury prone. He has been injury prone. He gets chopped down last year. He missed 3 months of the season. That can happen, impact injury. But another one for getting niggles in here and there. Naby Keita, where do I start? Since he's come into Liverpool, he's been a sick now, hospital bed. Oxlade-Chamberlain, another one who's been desperately unlucky with injuries. Now, I'm at the naming nearly every player near midfield there, bar Curtis Jones, Gav, that have been injury prone, all right? So we saw this in August, September. And then on top of that, you let Gini Wijnaldum go, a fella who played probably every minute of every season looking for the last 2 years. Now, in fairness, looking at him now and playing for PSG, it's clear to see why they didn't give him a contract, because he looks busted, all right? That's fair enough. So you need to look at it here, Gav. 5 out of those 7 players I mentioned have bad injury history. So how did the club not have the foresight to do a deal in the summer, whether it was getting one of the fuckers out or bringing someone else in? It was durable. Because it's going to come back to bite us, Gav.
Yeah.
You're turning around saying we've won this amount of games and about 3 points off. He's drawn 4 games out of first 10 Premier League games, 3 of them at home.
Mm.
Won them away. Brentford away, we're getting a ding-dong because our midfield can't get a hold of the game. All right? That was what were we saying after that game? We need a Thiago in there today, someone like a Thiago to control the pace of that game. Where was he? He was fucking injured. Now, players get injured, and that's fair enough. Saturday, what happened? We were at the game. Jordan Henderson plays centre mid on his own. Now, you can't tell me. You give Klopp any combination of players. The last fucking combination of 3 he would have put in there was the 3 that we ended up with. There was absolutely no balance in midfield because we're being let down by players exactly who have been injury-prone in past seasons. How have the recruitment team and the manager not have been the ruthless enough to get rid of one of the fuckers who's always on the fucking sideline and bring someone in that we needed? Because that will be the difference between us not winning and winning this title. I'm telling you now, draws kill title challenges. They do. We already have 4. Gav, you were saying we're only 3 points off the top. It doesn't make a difference. Chelsea have come to Anfield. Chelsea have gone to other players. Like, this is what I'm trying to say to you. Well, we're getting bitten again. We got bitten last year when they didn't buy a centre-half when we needed one when Lovren went. And we're getting bitten this year when they didn't buy a midfielder when Gini went. No matter what way you put it, I don't care if you're... Look, you cannot turn around and say, oh, it's knee-jerk, but it's not. Because fucking people have been saying this since August, September. We should have got a fucking midfielder in. There's nothing that... You can't tell me otherwise. And if we don't do one in January, it'll be the fucking same story again. And yeah, Centurion in the chat is saying, what's the solution? There's fucking loads of solutions. Look at Basuma. He battered every one of our midfielders on Saturday.
Yeah, well, how much did he cost?
It doesn't matter.
50 million. 50 million for a Basuma.
But City do it. Will Chelsea do it? These are the ones you want.
Yeah, but they're in a different. We're in a different stratosphere to them. You know what I mean?
We have not spent a penny, Keith, in the last 3 years.
I know, but if you ask Klopp, Deshaun, will I and if I, you ask what Klopp, I'm if watching?
If you ask Klopp on his arm and all cameras, he turn around and say, "You know what? I'd love to get rid of fucking Ox. I'd love to get him out the door, and I'd love to get rid of Keita."
Well, Keita is the one I'm thinking of. Keita is the one I'm going to ask about, right? So Keita is. Our contract next summer, isn't he? He's one of the batch of them that are still with Mo and Firmino and all. Be interesting to see if he gets a contract or what happens with him.
He doesn't want to sign one. He's already said he won't sign one because he wants a different role in the team. Do you know what I mean?
Because he's injured with Reuters cramp.
It's so frustrating because it's literally another part of the season, another season where we're literally just getting water out of the boat as we go along. And hoping that the fucking it settles down and we make it. But I'm telling you now, it's only going to get worse because we're going to be playing games every 2 days in about 6 weeks.
I think Klopp is too loyal to his players. He's always been too loyal to his players.
And it is.
He's not going to throw out. I mean, getting rid of someone like Ox, he's on big money. Where are you going to go? And the first team that comes to mind on all of this is always West Ham. West Ham aren't going to touch him now. West Ham aren't going to be, you know, they're not going to be offloading Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain to West Ham. This Villa might take him, Colin. I don't know.
It's just, again, and I'm not going to use the word negligence, because negligence is way too strong of a word, but how have the recruitment now had the foresight? Like, what did he just turn around and go, well, maybe they won't get injured this year?
No, I don't think that it is. I think, you know, I look around, I think it's probably the difficulty with getting players out. And don't get me wrong, you're right with regards to money being spent. And this is why I brought this up, because, you know, some people look at it as a bigger picture thing. I'm looking at it at the moment going, you know what, it's a niggling thing that's gone on. And we've seen it last season. We've seen it with a couple of these players throughout their Liverpool career, i.e. Ox, who was flying at the time when he gets that injury against Roma in the Champions League semi-final. Keita has been a constant. Henderson, you're saying this. We've said this loads of times. It's not like it's not like we're saying this for the fourth time. We've said this loads of times. Yeah, without shouting from the rooftops that we want the fucking owners out of the club or whatever. Go on.
My frustration, Gavin, is with Klopp.
Don't call me Gavin now. We'll be fucking row here in a minute.
Listen, my frustration is with Klopp, because just fucking let the fella have a season where he's not squeezing every last drop out of everyone in the bleeding squad. You know, people turn around and go, our club doesn't operate like that. Because he managed Dortmund, where he sold his best players every year. The fella is the best manager in the world by a bleeding country mile. If you gave Pep or your man Conte is at the going in there, they'd be in Lowman's after 6 weeks trying to juggle this squad in straitjackets, butting their head off walls. The fella is working miracles, season in, season out.
Yeah.
And they know it.
And that's why I brought up, like, and it's interesting when you say about Keita is one of the 2022 batch. So was Firmino, so was Mane, so was Salah. Yeah. Isn't that right? So,
Ox,
you know,
as well,
might be a year later.
Contracts, Gav.
Hmm?
We're talking about contracts and all being up now again. We did all the work in the summer again, nailing down all the big boys. And I do believe they will get Salah tied down. I do believe that. But this is not me calling the bleeding owners out. This is on the recruitment.
Yeah. No, it's just I didn't know I was going to get that strong a reaction. To be honest with you,
but like, think about it, right?
I just thought it'd be something to be discussed.
The fellas in the background obviously said, "Hey, don't give Genie a contract; he's busted." So if they have the intelligence of the foresight to pick that out, how could they not see that we would be light at stages in midfield this year? Because like, you can't turn around saying, "Oh, these are unforeseen circumstances." This doesn't compare to last year. Last year, Virgil is on the end of a horror challenge. Like, fucking Joe Gomez, we don't know what happened to him at England. This all happened in the space of 3 weeks. And then Matip is Matip. Like, that was completely unmitigated. Now, they probably could have signed one in. And in the end, you get Kanate, who were obviously waiting on. But who are they waiting on? Are they going to start telling us it's Bellingham now? Because he can get the fuck if they think anyone is going to swallow that. There's not a chance.
Yeah, like that's £100 million, and those links were rubbish by himself and his father, I think, very very quickly after the original link came out. But you know, I think it's a hard discussion to have, because when you talk about this, people think you're just like, oh, you're completely gone over the top, and you want. The owners out when you want fucking everything.
I would have loved to be wrong.
It's
on
not
this.
Even that. I think like the way you are, the way I am. I think, Charlie, you spoke well in it, because what you're saying is, look, you're agreeing with what we're all saying, and that this is a recording team and it has something to be fixed. But you know, we've seen it happen, and then it's happening again, and it's just starting to. It's like I said earlier. It's one step forward, two steps back. You know the sort of way you're constantly in that. You're in that groove where it's just, you can't get out of it. You know, the sort of the way we can't get them all together.
I don't think I'm going over the top saying here, and maybe Conan and even agree, if we had done the extra body in midfield and forward, we'd piss this league. We would piss this league, because we have the best starting 11 in world football, as far as I'm concerned. Genuinely, we got 1 to 11 in our team, and it's unbelievable. But the drop off is huge past the 14, 14, 15. Chelsea have effectively two teams now, same as City.
I suppose a good question there would be, because we're talking about the profile of midfielder and their function in the team, and like I Liverpool definitely have one of the best teams in the league or in the world. But is it worth, like, if you were genuinely sort of part of that discussion of buying a player or spending the money and having all those, like, I completely get that, like you saw with Foresight, all these players because they have injury problems, but it is a big list of players as well. And to sort of bring in one of those players, it might be, or somebody to replace one of them, it would cost a lot of money, right? And like you only really want somebody, and I really don't mean to downplay what their job would be, but like you don't, I don't think you want to be spending 50 million on a player like that. You want them to come in and fulfill a very specific job and get the most out of your front three and your wing backs.
I think for real.
I get that, but it comes back to the bigger picture then of like, this team is getting on. It is aging.
Yeah.
And it really, and we, I think me and Gav and even Keith himself, we agreed that we're probably maybe a window or two behind and where we should be in terms of actually building this team for the next players, because we actually need Klopp 2.0 now. We need Klopp's next, like the stat popped up where it let to go away that it was the oldest team in the competition that was fielded that match day. So they are getting on, and we're just leaving ourselves so much work to do in the following seasons that to kind of sit back and just do nothing. You're seeing the difference that Konate comes in. Obviously, he wasn't great on Saturday, but you know there now, he's there for 8-9 years at the top. He's going to be a top-level player. We should be starting to see that now progressing through the team, because we haven't actually done that. And that's my worry, that Klopp actually hasn't got that long left. I think he's up in 2024.
Mm-hmm.
We shouldn't be leaving it to chance with this fella. You should be maximising every little thing you can with this fella, and just giving him exactly what he needs. Even if he doesn't want it, just say, here, use it. Because I tell you what, if he had to sign a midfielder and bleeding this summer, he would have been getting games now. People turn around and say, oh, he won't get games in the team. Where is he going to play? He's not going to want to play. You hear though, even Tony today turn around going, I'll make myself the main man. If players are good enough, they'll back themselves to go in there and get the job. Don't look at Jota. So it shouldn't be these excuses that, oh, are you going to find it hard for a fella to come in and want it to be fourth, fifth choice? They don't see it like that. They see it as a challenge.
Yeah, and like for real says there, he reckons Elliot's injury changed a lot. People say you can't rely on a young lad, but he would have remained a regular without that freak injury. 100% he would have. And, you know, the freak injuries, I don't mind. I don't mind. They just happen, you know.
Yeah.
Like, I don't even count the Thiago one away or Everton because, well, it happened and it was horrendous. But I don't count that as he's unreliable. For me, he's had one injury since he's come to Liverpool. For me, all right? But it's the other stuff that just ticks over, and you're firefighting all the time. And I think, you know, I watched that game on Saturday and I just couldn't get over how bad the midfield were. And then when I looked at the makeup of it, Henderson was just going ballistic for the whole game, because the two of the lads are attacking-minded players that were really needed defensively. If they were on point defensively, like you lads have said, bring Fabinho back in. He just comes in and says, you don't fucking go anywhere until I tell you. And, you know, it basically would have been that. You go nowhere until I tell you. And then when we win the ball, you do what you like. But you get back in. And it was just so open. It kind of encapsulated for me the firefighting that goes on a little bit. And this isn't me going blah, 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 blah. It's just something that was in my head since Saturday. And I just wanted to talk to you about it. It was a brilliant discussion. So well done to everybody. I forgot. Oh, you know, I have. There you go. Well done to everybody on that. That was amazing. Well done. I just wanted to use a sound effect, you know that. But look, the season so far, because we're rapidly running out of time, I want you to pick a team each, and I want you to go on the basis of they've really impressed me, they've really been shit, or like, who even are they? Because they're so middle of the road, it's untrue, right? So, Keith, I'm going to come to you first. The league so far, I'm just going to pop the league table up on the screen there for you. So you have Chelsea, Liverpool, City and West Ham hold the top four. United just behind. Arsenal coming up on the rails, I suppose. Then you have Wolves, Brighton, Spurs, Everton, Leicester, Brentford, Palace, and Southampton right in mid-table, proper mid-table. Then you have Villa, Watford, Leeds, Burnley, Newcastle, Norwich on the bottom. Out of all those, Keith, just quickly pick me a team that's been really impressive, really appalling, or just so average that you're nearly forgetting they're in the league.
Okay, impressive. It's easy to go for West Ham, but I'm
not. No. I just want you to pick one of impressive, one. Average, or team.
Okay. It's hard. I mean, Norwich are bleeding dirt, aren't they? But I'm going to go for Wolves as the most impressive. Because I didn't realise they were seventh in the league. That's shocking me. West Ham are fourth, and it should be them. But I sort of expected them to build on last season, whereas I thought Wolves would have fell off a cliff when the great Nuno left, and they haven't. So Wolves surprised me.
Okay. Colin?
Yeah, like West Ham is the obvious answer, but mostly because it's fresh in my mind that they got spanked by them. But coming up to that game, like, we knew that was going to happen. Like, it was just West Ham are at that level now where it was like, fuck, like, they're stronger than us, they're bigger, they're way more streetwise, they're going to have a field day with us. We knew their midfield was going to dominate, and the depressing thing is every single one of those things came to play. So West Ham are just at that level now where they're just a cut above everybody else, like the middle pack.
Yeah, okay. Shani, good, bad or indifferent?
I'm going to go with good. I'm going to say Palace have really, really, really impressed me at times this year. Mostly because of Vieira. Like, I've watched him a few times now. I watched him at home to Spurs. I watched him away to Arsenal, where they're really unlucky. Every game I've watched them play, I can literally see the style of play. I can see the same patterns of play throughout the team. And some individuals have been really good. Conor Gallagher, special mention to him. Mm. I think it was one that I didn't expect to go well. I thought he would have been one who was out by Christmas, because I know little or nothing about him as a coach. But
I think they've drawn six of their games.
Yeah. It turns out he's a really apt coach. And I think they will get better under him as well. They made some good signs. I think Edward, if he didn't bleed and stop playing for Celtic 6 months before the end of his time, he would have been at a far better side than he was now. But I've been impressed by Palace. And even with that Tifo in the stand last week against Newcastle. So they get a thumbs up for that. Indifferent.
I'm going to keep the positivity going, because there's no point in talking about Norwich or Burnley. So I'm going to go with Brighton and Hove Albion. I think they have a proper manager on their hands. A really, really, really proper manager on their hands. The way he handles himself. Do you know what impressed me the most? He came out with a quote last week, and I think it might be you, Sean, you were talking to me about, and he said, Salah isn't world class, he's out of this world class. And then he brought his side to Anfield, and they could have been 3-0 down after 30 minutes, but they stuck at it, and they improved and improved and improved. And not only improved, but seeing Liverpool's frailties in midfield and actually carried out a plan to hurt them. And We spoke about Brighton. I think they hit the post or the bar the most times last year, and they had the biggest XG in the league last year, and they couldn't score goals, and they needed a striker, and they didn't seem to look like they went and solved that. But you're seeing players starting to chip in a bit more from the wide areas. He's got them set playing in a way where their wide men are getting a lot more chances now as well. And I think to see them where they are after last season, I think is unbelievable, and they'll be very lucky to hold on to him in the next 18 months, in my opinion. Very, very lucky. And something you said to me earlier, Colin, or said to us all, we were all here, we all heard it, and you said, I don't know what the natural upgrade is. He's your upgrade on Dean Smith for me. I think the style of player, or the style of manager he is, the way he gets teams playing, and the players that you have at Villa, I think he'd be exceptional for Aston Villa.
I was listening to Colin's pod earlier, so I'm looking forward to this.
I don't want to jump ahead, Gav, right, but I had a... I had Graham Potter down as the biggest winner this week.
Well, we can go into winners and losers. So who's your winner is Graham Potter, so let's go there.
Yeah, but a lot of it was sarcastic, right? Like, no, I want
okay, are we going to have a row? Do I need to go and get cans?
I want, for the record, like, you know, I completely respect Graham Potter. I think he is a class manager. I think he's brilliant. I think Dean Smith's a really good manager as well. But, just in the short term, like, I know they got a good result against Liverpool, but mm-hmm. they haven't won in six games. Like, you know, so it does fascinate me. Like, you know, these people, like, they get that sort of, they get into the public psyche, and then when things aren't going well for other clubs like Villa, it's like they have a look around, and it's like, right, get me Graham Potter. Again, he's doing a good job. That's the last time I qualify that, but... Like, Brighton have spent money as well, the same way Villa have. Like, they've had a net spend of 200 million in their first 3 years in the Premier League. Now, Potter's been in now for a year extra than that. But, like, they have spent. Like, that's what you have to do to stay in the Premier League. And I think they are better. I think they're more stable. But Chris Shuten had them 16th and 17th. Potter's had them 15th and 17th, I think. So it's not that big a leap that he's taken them onto. Not yet, anyway. And again, like, we know he's a good manager and stuff like that, but I think he's the biggest winner, because even though I think it's going all right for him, I don't think it's going exceptionally well. And it's like your stock goes up when you're not as big a focal point in the conscious of everybody. Like, it's like when Tim Howard's playing with Everton compared to Tim Howard playing with United. We're not watching him every week. We're not detailing every single pass or every time he goes up for a corner. We just assume that he's doing well. But once he's in the big time, then you really get the spotlight on him. And I think a bit of that's happening with Graham Potter at the minute. Like, so even though it's ticking along nicely, even though he's still doing a good job because he's a good manager, I think he has just leapt about 10 places above where you're telling me he's a complete upgrade on Dean Smith. And, you know, he's linked with a Spurs job and the Newcastle job. And, you know, I assume, like, if we're going to keep talking about Liverpool contingency plans, and he might well be, but, like, you know, Graham Potter will eventually come into the conversation if we were a year down the line. So he's the biggest winner for me this weekend, because yet again they didn't win, but yet again he has won.
Yeah, and look, going up. I think his stock is going up, and I get where you're coming from with where they finished with Brighton, but look, Aston Villa are a way bigger club than Brighton, way bigger. They're on a different level for me, right? But I think when I look at Graham Potter, and not only the job he's done this season, I think the job he's done last season, and the way he's tried to get them playing football, and he's kind of nurtured this team into playing that way, and he comes with a fairly big coaching reputation. What I mean by it is, if he jumps Brighton from 15th or 17th, wherever he finished last season, and he puts them 8th in this year, I think because of and I know the money that's being spent, and I get all that, because of the size of the club and the players he can attract, regardless, because you just pay more money as a Premier League club anyway, I think if he went into Villa, I think they've better players. I think they've a better structure. I think they're a bigger club. They've more expectation. But I think his style of football at Villa would go down really, really well. And I would look at Villa as probably, at the moment, in around 10th in the Premier League would be my level of Villa. I think he could push them right into a European spot. I genuinely do. And it might never happen, but I think he'd have a great chance if he moved to a bigger club. But he's your winner of the week. Who's your loser of the week?
My loser of the week is Daniel Levy. Yeah, so he's gotten his man. It's a good appointment, but I think there's just some bollocks around Daniel Levy, where he's this shrewd operator. Like, and we keep getting told, especially by Sky fucking Sports, that Daniel Levy is just, like, you know, he's great with his money, like, and he's tough and he drives a hard bargain. Daniel Levy, we all mentioned it, should have signed Conte in the summer. He was like, Conte was leaving Inter Milan. Inter Milan were bust. He wanted to go. He spoke to him. Like, there's no difference now. The only difference is 10 games later and Spurs have less of a chance of getting to where Conte wants him to go. But Daniel Levy, being the shrewd operator he is, didn't go for him, went down the list to somebody who we all said was never going to work. It was set up for Nuno to fail, never mind it being a weird appointment anyway. Now he has to pay, like Shawnee said, he has to pay Nuno 12.5 million. I know he's paying Conte probably way more than he was. I think it's 15.5 million a year he's paying him now. Like I'd say that was a way easier deal for Conte to talk about, you know, when they came back to him pleading, like, please help me. Or as Keith alludes to, please help me get into Europe. So once again, Daniel Levy is just paying over the odds for something. And I think I have this inbuilt thing now against him, because I'll never forget, like, Villa were in the Championship and he came with this poxy offer for Jack Grealish. Grealish wanted to go. He thought he was going to Spurs. 3 million plus Josh Anoma. Get the fuck out of here. Like, you know?
Do you know what? You may be right to hate that man to the day you die. Yeah.
Like, you're talk about kicking you when you're down. Like, and again, the thing was, like, you know, Levy's not going to spend over the odds for a Championship player. Jack Grealish went for 100 million 3 years later. Like, you know, so he could have had a 100 million pound asset, another one sitting at his club, if he had just spent. Villa were looking for 25 million, I think.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't a lot.
I remember, Josh, yeah.
Like, we can do a whole podcast on the fact that he thinks Josh Anoma was worth 17 million. Never mind that it was just that and 3 million. So it's like, that was a waste of money. I think he's wasted money with Harry Kane now because his value is just plummeting. Yeah. The longer he walks around, like, will he ever get offered? Was it 120 million Man City put in? Will he ever get offered that again?
Nah, like, Gonzo.
And it's like having a 100 million Ferrari in your garage, and your man beside you saying, "That Ferrari you have there," keep.
Yeah,
and like, it's nice to look at, and it's done the job and all. But like, we haven't really done that with that, and
exactly.
it keeps breaking down. Your man across the road wants to pay well over what it's worth. I think you should let it go. No, not letting it go. Stick it to your principles. On 120 million, or he's not gone. Daniel, I really think you should. I think like with the 120 million, you might be able to plow it in. And no, I'm keeping him. I said I'm shrewd. I'm Daniel Levy. I'm not giving up a penny. Daniel, that car keeps fucking breaking down, mate. I think you should get rid of it.
Get rid of the car, Daniel. Yeah, get rid of the car.
And now the car is honking a cat shite.
His
missus is running a muck at him now. See you in that poxy car out in that garage.
He's hiding receipts for the motor factors and everything. Yeah, I know where it's going.
The best thing Daniel Levy has done the last 12 months is fucking pay Eddie Hearn to let Bleeding Usyk punch the head off fucking Anthony Joshua in the centre circle because everything else has gone to pot. Around
but them. That's like it's all predicated on Daniel Levy just wanting Spurs to be in that element as well, like, you know, just be in the big time, like, and be show business, and because they're a London club, because they've got a lovely stadium, it is pushed by Sky and probably the national media as well, like, where they're so desperate for Spurs to be an elite club too, and that's where we get all that bullshit then about the Spurs style of football. Spurs change their manager every 18 months. Like, what is their style of football? Like, and the amount of players they come through, the only manager who's won a trophy with them is Wande Ramos. Was he playing the Spurs style of football? Like, nobody harps back to Wande Ramos, is they?
So, the Spurs way comes from Hoddle and they remember Ardiles had like Williams. Six of
I've seen that Ricky Villa going more times than I see me bleeding down brothers for Jesus sake.
Yeah. But that's you're right, like that, and there is, and it couldn't, like, you hear of an Arsenal way. The Arsenal way killed Arsenal for 15 years. It really has. But I think that's a good loser, so I'm gonna a point for Conan there, and I'll give you 2 points for Potter, right? Is that okay? I don't know why I've started a point system, but I'm just handing them out now.
I'm giving out
Shoddy, I'll tell you the scores at the end. I might be, I have an air horn that I'm going to let off just to let people know. Shoddy, winner, please.
I'm going to go with Arteta, Gav, and Arsenal, because we were talking about this manager merry-go-round and how easy it is for clubs to kind of get rid of managers now and just try again and just keep throwing money on it, because that's actually what Arsenal have done. They've spent an awful lot of money. And I remember in the summer when they signed the 4 or 5 players that they signed, going, what's going on here? Arsenal are at the spending 150 million and they're literally no better now than they were before they spent a penny. And then I watched the thing with your man Edu, and he came out and said, look, we were wrong. We signed players like Willian against Arteta's will, and we got him out and we'll deliver it. And Arteta basically came out in the first game of the season and said, all of these players that I'm at the bringing in now, these are my players and this is my team. And there was a bit of a pile on at the start of the season when they literally had a mishmash of a back five and a lot of their players are missing. But every time I watch them now, they're getting better. They're getting much better. Every player he's brought in, you can see that fit for purpose. Ramsdale has been brilliant. Now, I know we're all saying, I laughed at the idea of him signing. And it's kind of like, just kind of waiting for him to shit himself, like, at some stage. But he's been absolutely brilliant. Ben White beside Gabriel and Tomiyasu, they look brilliant together.
Tomiyasu was a great signing for them.
Yeah, they just look solid as a unit. You can see that they're well coached. You can see that Arsenal are well coached. And that's the big thing. You have Smith Rowe coming in, who's one of the most exciting young players in England. They do well to get Odegaard back. They got Partey in there. I just really see, for the first time now in a long time, what Arsenal trying to do, and a little bit of perseverance with Arteta. And he's done well. And one thing I like about Arteta is, you see with some of these coaches, for example, Ole talking about Tyson Fury getting up after an 8 count last week. Brendan Rodgers towards the back end of his time at Liverpool. When the pressure's on, you see the fakes by a mile. They talk an apparent amount of shite. Arteta never did. He always took blame. He always took responsibility. He never came out with anything stupid or daft. You always felt like, well, he's being honest, and you're kind of, you're seeing with him. Like, he wasn't afraid to ruffle a few feathers. He fucked the Bamyang off the day before. He was the captain in North London Derby because he was acting the bollocks and ill-disciplined, and he just fucked him off. He just said, that's it. You're not playing today. You're out of team. And he showed a bit of authority, and it's starting to turn around now because he even has him playing again. Yeah. He has Aubameyang getting a tune out of him again. He's pulled him out of Moya. So fair play to him. And they look like they might be able to actually sneak into top four. And the reason why I say that is because they're literally playing one game a week now until May. And they've a big squad. And he is a good manager. Like, people, he was getting the sticker. He used to put Collins out for Pep. My bollocks. Like, Pep wouldn't have him around if he wasn't worth his salt. So fair play to him. Arteta, I think he's done a really, really good job at turning it around. And when nobody else believed in him, he seemed to believe in himself. And he seems to have them players playing for him, which is really good considering half the fan base were shouting for him to leave and wanted him out after 3 games. So he's my winner of the week. And that was, I could say now with confidence that they have turned the corner now, because I think everyone looked at that game on Saturday, 12:30 away to Leicester, thinking this will be sort of that test. And it looks like to me that they're torn in the corner.
Fair enough. I don't agree with you, but fair enough. Because loads of reasons, but when they lose the next one, we'll have another chat around it. What?
I don't really care if you disagree with me. I don't really care
if you disagree with me either. Because me and Shawnee, we're all right, aren't we, Shawnee? Do people think me and Shawnee row all the time, don't they?
No, we were all good. Yeah, me and Gavin had a crack in Liverpool
crack we had. Losers play, Shawnee.
Man City and Spurs and Levy and the whole lot of them. Like, I can't think of a time when, because of one transaction, everyone lost out. City couldn't get Kane in. There's games that he can't hit a cow's arse with a banjo at home. Like, you've seen it, Southampton nil all, well beaten the weekend. City looked like the City the year we ran away with the league. No fight, no interest. They go 1-0 down and they go absolutely rasher. Fucking Zaha's given Laporte the jockey back up the pitch because he just wants to pull him down. No discipline at all. I actually think that City might start to slip a little bit. I don't think that Grealish hasn't worked out. I'm sure you had delighted counting. I don't think he's pulled up any trees since going there. He just looks like exactly what he said he'd be. Another player. Another Mahrez.
Another one they already have, yeah.
Another one, like
that's one of the ones that annoys me, like, because, like, Pep, everyone was so willing to praise Pep for it. We're going to take Grealish on to the next level. Grealish has gotten worse, if anything.
He's another number 10 there. They would have been better off signing Buendia. Like, that's that, because it's literally what it's done. Like, you know what I mean? They were good against those, yeah, fair enough. But I just seen that little bit of no backbone. They look like that. No backbone to the City on Saturday. And then Spurs, they're just a shit show. Yeah, Harry Kane. I could see how annoyed you were getting in the pub on Saturday at Harry Kane.
The
fella had his phone in his sock, I think. He was on his WhatsApp. Like,
I couldn't get over it. And, like, I've no love for Spurs or United, but I was literally saying to you, weren't they? Look, it wasn't even when he didn't have, it was not when he had the ball. When he had the ball, he just looked hesitant and he was kind of wandering with the ball. When he hadn't got it, he wasn't making runs into the box. He wasn't looking for passes. He was just wandering around the pitch. Like the goal Ronaldo gets, it comes out to the edge of the box, and I think it might be Maguire comes onto it. And Kane takes about 3 steps towards Maguire. And because Maguire pushes the ball 5 yards away, doesn't chase him. Doesn't do anything. He just literally, he actually runs the opposite direction towards United's goal, as if to say, well, that's none of my business. But the centre half of Manchester United is 20 yards from your goal, and you're the nearest man to him, but it's none of your business. And he just, so much to say on Harry Kane, but it's ridiculous.
It's amazing how the media don't start to get on his case, you know, when you see the lack of effort that
yeah, because you can tell you,
Harry Kane.
Yeah, because you can tell people it's Nuno Espirito Santo's fault. No, that's a good loser as well. I like that. You've thrown two teams in there, which I like.
I just think with City, it just looks again to the type of, they normally just think they can just turn up at home and beat teams, but it's not the case. Look at, and do you know what, Gav? It's the same with us on Saturday. There was a little bit of what about Rio's on Saturday where we went 2-0 up, man. We're grand here.
Yeah, there was.
We're smelling ourselves a little bit.
Yeah.
And I think that's why Chelsea might have the edge, because they haven't got over the line in the league yet with Tuchel, and the hunger seems to desert. Well, definitely City, but just look like the wars on Saturday that we went, we're grand here. We're fucking cruising.
And to be honest with you, like, as Andy was saying to us the other day, Chelsea haven't hit a patch at all. And everyone hits a bad patch. It's all about where others are when you hit that patch and how you react and how they react to you. A little bit like when Liverpool got those injuries last season and City smelt it and went right and went on a massive run because they knew they could back themselves. I keep getting this question in the chat, right? So I'm going to address it again for the last time. Is Grizz no longer part of the Trippers? Is Avi now a solo act like the Jackson 5 breaking up? No, Grizz does a show on a Thursday night with the LFC Day Trippers. He's going to be doing the odd Sunday as well, but at the moment he's working on his own YouTube channel, okay? And that's his priority at the moment, and that's it. There's nothing else to be said about it. He isn't doing as many shows with us as he used to. He's doing shows for himself, and he still does a show here in the Thursday. I'm not going through this again. I keep forgetting all
this stuff happens in the training ground. Fights are natural in the training
ground. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I reckon I could take him anyway, so it doesn't matter. So, moving on. Keith, you're up next.
Yes.
Sorry. Shani, you get 3 points as well. It's going to be a draw, by the way, just to let you know. Points wise. So, Keith, show us how you're going to get this 3 points. Winner, please.
Raul Jimenez is my winner. Raul Jimenez scores last night, his fourth home goal, is it, for Wolves since he fractured his skull. And the reason I've gone for Raul Jimenez is, and I touched on Wolves being my surprise pack of the season, I was expecting them to stink the place out when they got rid of Nuno. Not because I thought Nuno was anyway a spectacular manager, but they brought in Bruno Lage and they lost Rui Patricio and brought in Jose Sa. And I thought there was a lot of changes there that went on, and I didn't know if, you know, the likes of Connor Cody would, you know, a new manager comes in, we have different ideas, but they've actually done well. And Jimenez has come back from a fractured skull, and I was dubious about if he would be able to, because the one that sticks in my head was the Petr Cech does his head. What year was that? 2004, 2005 or something, when Stephen Hunt collides with him. And he wears the helmet ever since then. In FIFA 21, if you signed him, I went into the negotiations. He has.
I hadn't got on him in the negotiations.
He does, yeah, he does.
Oh,
he
has my on God, him in the negotiations. That's amazing. Okay.
But that's not to belittle him, right? But
yeah, he gets 4 points. I don't care what he says.
I think he might have stolen this at the end. Are you telling me that Petr Cech in FIFA 21 goes in for a contract negotiation and he's sitting with the fucking man?
With the hat and a suit. That's a suit on and the hat. Yeah, he does.
Do you reckon 100%. He wears it getting the big shop in?
He could do, yeah. I'd say so. And that's my point.
Conan wants in. Go on, Conan.
Yeah. Who are you managing, Keith? Why were you trying to sign Raul Jimenez?
I know. I was trying to sign Petr Cech.
For a water polo team and he's seeing the little hat on him.
Yeah, that's it, exactly. Now, he'll get a picture of that. He does. He wears the hat and win the negotiations on FIFA. But and that's the sort of thing was, ever since that happened to Petr Cech, he always had to wear the hat. Now, I know different injuries, skull different cap. Level of injuries that happens, and especially around the head. But for Jimenez was a player he will use his head a lot more.
Is there that him there?
There he is in negotiations.
Oh my God. That's brilliant.
There you go.
Shani, take a screenshot of that. Take a screenshot of that and WhatsApp it to me and I'll throw it up on screen for everybody.
Just in case things got feisty in the boardroom, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
there you go. You never know when a dick gets thrown. But like, Cech's a goalkeeper, and realistically, already he has that collision with Hunt, and it's a bit of a freak. They won't usually get a head injury in goal, you know what I mean? They can do, but it wouldn't be that common. Whereas Jimenez is a centre forward, and he was a centre forward that sort of uses his head, and he'd be up in challenges and things like that. And to see him back playing, I didn't think I would see him back. I thought he might have, you know, recovered, and he would have got a token sort of League Cup appearance for Wolves, and then would have sort of moved back to, you know, back to Portugal and back to Mexico then down the line. And it's just great to see that he's back playing, and he looks sharp as well. You know, he's got a few goals this season, and he does look like he has improved. Not improved, but that he's got back to a good level that he's on. So I just felt, yeah, that he was the winner of the week for me.
Okay.
But Peter Cech's jumping in, a joint winner of the week as
Yeah,
well.
Peter Cech's definitely getting a mention. Okay, loser of the week, please.
Aston Villa.
Yeah. Okay, Aston go on.
Aston Villa.
Hero to zero here. Go on.
Yeah. No, and look, it's not really too bad, Colin, to be honest. I am a fan of Aston Villa as a club. The same way, you know, I like big traditional clubs like Leeds, like Villa. You know, these clubs, younger fans don't really respect or really understand the size and magnitude of some of these clubs. And when Villa came back up, I was actually, you know, glad to see them coming up. Traditional big club. They have a bit of money behind them. And they have a manager in Dean Smith who I like, because, you know, when he was at Brentford, it's similar to Graham Potter in a way that he's not your typical English manager, you know. And even though he looks like he could be a Sean Dyche or a, you know, Steve Bruce type character, he is actually more of a thinker than some of these traditional English managers. So I thought they were improving, you know, they done well last season, and I thought they'd push on this year. And he's lose Jack Grealish, and I think that was that was inevitable, really. For every there you go. Who's signing him? $45,000 a week he's on as well, and that's pretty recent.
Yeah.
It's a great life.
There you go. I can't believe that.
That's a good deal with Canterbury.
It's absolutely amazing. But go on.
Yeah, no, it was inevitable that they were going to lose Grealish, and what I was sort of thinking is, spend that money well and they can push on again. Because the makeup of the top four, I know a lot of people were expecting United to be better. And, you know, they bring in Ronaldo, Sancho, Varane, you expect them to be good. But there was, you know, the drop-off after that, I think Spurs and Arsenal looked like they were going to be in a decline. And there was an opportunity, really, to go up into fifth. Do what West Ham have done, to go up there and to really push into the mix. And if someone does drop out, you're sort of positioned. And the signings they've made, you know, they're good names, but it hasn't been really well thought out, in my opinion. So they brought in Danny Ings, who I think is a better player than Ollie Watkins, to be honest. But they had Ollie Watkins, who was a big money signing, who do a lot of hard work. But they always played with one striker, didn't they? Always played the one forward up there, and they brought in another striker. So you've upset the balance there. They bring in Buendia. Buendia had done well for Norwich in the Premier League. He didn't get many goals, but he did a lot of chance creation, all that, them mad stats that come out. You know, he created a lot that they weren't scoring, but he was a decent player. But they brought in Leon Bailey as well. And you're like, right, well, Bailey's going to be, he's a winger. You brought in two forwards. Where's Buendia going to play? And it just seemed like they bought the wrong players to suit how they played. And there's nothing wrong with signing good players. But I just thought they could have done better. I think, you know, when you've Marvellous Nakamba still getting games in your midfield, I think they could have done better maybe in centre mid. Do you know what I mean? I think...
Yeah.
It's easy. I mean, again, I listen to your pod all the time, Colin. It's excellent. Anyone that doesn't listen, get on it. But I know you're giving stick to Matt Targa at the moment, that he's absolute stock in the shite these days. So yeah. Why is it now Ashley Young that's the option? You know, Ashley Young is your option to come in for Matt Targa. Could he have upgraded maybe at fullbacks? Because we know fullback now is such an important part in the modern game. And you know, you look at like Manchester United, they spent $50 million on Aaron Wan-Bissaka, and he's not really a modern fullback. Could they have maybe utilised their fullbacks a bit better? It just seemed very scattergun, and we're seeing the effects now. The only wins they've had in the last 8 or 9 were against Everton and United, which go down well in these parts, in fairness, but they're losing everything else around that. And I just, don't understand. You know, the approach to this season is, what does it come down to? What's the reasoning behind it?
Jesus, Colin, he's fucking pinned you to the wall there, kid.
No, like, it's funny because I agree with everything he said, unfortunately. But it comes down to the midfield. It is interesting. Ings is a weird signing, right? We have four good centre-halves. And in a way, it's like, in an ideal world, you would have all that anyway, because you want that competition. You want, the way we were talking about Liverpool now at the minute, you want to be able to cater for when people are injured. But Villa just had priority. Villa's team still isn't ready, to worry about, having a really good second striker to come into the mix. They still need two midfielders at least. They're very top-heavy then in that wide area. And then almost like the Solskjaer thing, and this is what worried me about Dean Smith now this year. Solskjaer went to a 5-3-2. People call it a 3-5-2, but it was a 5-3-2 because it had Wan-Bissaka and Shaw, and Wan-Bissaka wasn't getting forward. And, then just all those players in that were never going to see game time if you persisted with that. Sancho was obviously a big money signing. And then, this is what worries me, because we've been hammering Solskjaer all season. And then, you see 30 minutes into the game tonight, Solskjaer just takes off a defender for a striker, and it's what are you working on in training? Your plan can't be, we can't go 1-0 down, because you always fucking go 1-0 down. So if your system is relying on you not going 1-0 down, it's a really bad system, and that's what's happening with Villa.
Can come on here every week, right, and just absolutely lash things at people over, and just randomly, literally, we could be talking about anything, and you just go, no, stop, I have something to say, and you can just go for it, because I'm fucking having a great time here.
It's only when Villa are going badly, but yeah, that's it. Villa's team aren't good enough. Dean Smith went all in on Jack Grealish, right? And that made sense, because he had a player who was way better than everybody else. And everybody was right in hindsight for me. I thought Grealish would definitely have stayed this year. I think I was on here in the summer arguing with Jamie, saying, nah, he'll be here for another year. I thought he would have given it another year. And Smith obviously thought that as well. And then they just... the players just aren't confident. There was 2 weeks there, you mentioned the Everton and Villa or Everton United games. They played Chelsea, got beat, but they played really well, played them in the middle of the week in the League Cup with their second team, fucking hammered them. And we were thinking, Jesus, Villa are in a good place right now. But once you scratch the surface, almost like, Shauna, you're right about Arsenal, but I'm sort of waiting for them just to be hit with a bit of adversity again and see how they deal with it. And once Villa meet that, they don't react, and the players all go back in their heels. They all hide again. They don't have that midfielder to take control of a game, and it just spirals out of control. They're young and experienced, and they're flaky, and they just need more big-time players around them. And that's what Grealish gave you. But Grealish is gone. So let's give Keith -2 for his points total. For his how have I ended up down this rabbit hole?
Jonathan says...
Yeah, I'm watching that match in a pub on Saturday, and on Sunday watching the game, and I seen Ashley Young running around in a Villa jersey, and I thought I was having a fit.
He actually shouted at us. We are sitting there, Shawnee was to my right, Andy was beside me, and Shawnee's other half was beside me there, and literally Ashley Young flashed up on the screen, and Shawnee turned and shouted at me, "Ashley fucking Young," and I went, "Yeah, Villa," and he went, "What the fuck is going on here?"
I turned around and looked again, and I seen Martin O'Neill, and he was whipping balls into John Carew. I was saying, "You put the league, get a Premier League years off, and put the match back on, will you, for fuck's sake?" I didn't know what was going on.
It was
the worst of it. Actually, Young was playing centre midfield for Aston Villa. I think we were saying this in the podcast, the fucking Premier League, and we have John McGinn, Nakamba, and Ashley Young as our three-man midfield. Relegate us. That is shameful.
We think we have problems.
Villa have got a good outing there, and I think they'll be all right. They're missing Ings. They're definitely missing Ings.
They should be more than all right, though. I think the fans should expect... I hate the entitlement culture in football these days, but I think Villa fans should be in the same kind of boat as the Newcastle fans, where, look, they are a fucking big club. They should be they should be expecting more. You know what I mean? They should be looking at getting into Europe and being like a Leicester and being like those other clubs, or like a West Ham, because they deserve it. The fans deserve it. Ultimately, they do. And they have got money there in behind. They just need to sort out the fucking recruitment. Mm.
Yeah. Well, Jonathan, Jonathan says that Conan enjoys a rant about Pep too, which is very enjoyable. And Kevin Ball backs that up by saying, this Villa fan is hilarious. Get him on more, lads. He's welcome any week. He's first name on the team sheet when he's available. Because I just love the way Conan just takes no shit.
Ashley Young of the day trippers.
Absolutely fucking lamps into people. I love it. So that's all. That's everybody there. My winner of the week, and I'm going to do this quick because we're running out of time. My winner of the week is Patrick Vieira. I felt very sorry for him at the Emirates a couple of weeks ago when Arsenal snatched a 2-2 draw, and they shouldn't have. It was just one of those goals where you look going, ah, oh, fucking hell. You don't mind if it's a cracker, but this was unbelievable how it felt to Lacazette. But what he does there with Palace at the weekend, they get a good goal. They expose City, who have a man sent off, and the second goal is just brilliant. The way they're so cool and calm, and it's a brilliant finish. It's just one of those. I've seen a tweet here from this guy Kelvin. He says, I really thought the Patrick Vieira would be a bad pick for Crystal Palace, but my days with the signing he had brought in and Eze showing slow and coming back from injury, Palace will maybe finish top half of the table this season, and I hope they do. I've no love for Crystal Palace, don't get me wrong. It's just I kind of worried about him when he came in as well, because do you remember they brought in, was it Ronald De Boer? Or one of them,
Frank.
And it was an absolute fucking
game.
It was a car crash. Chris De Boer would have done a decent job as opposed to Frank De Boer. But
from a Liverpool stakeholder.
I actually remember a match of the day. They lost the first 9 games, didn't they?
They didn't win. I don't know whether they lost the first 9, but I think he was sacked after four straight games.
No. Hodgson comes in and saves the day. Well, I just remember going, mother of Jack. It's all derby are always the barometer, aren't they? Remember that derby team who are at? And that's being leveled at Norwich now, really. And Norwich going to be worse than derby. They might be.
I said it to you on the pub on Sunday. I think there's a very good chance that Norwich don't break 10 points this season. Genuinely. Because I just look at them and go, they're so naive. They're so bad at the back. I don't know what they have going forward.
They need to get Pilkey going, I think. If they can get something out of Pilkey, I think we can be onto something really good there. I think he's the man to turn that around, because he got goals in the Premier League before and he just hasn't been able to deal with this.
It's because of the players around him as well. They're not giving them much.
Good number 10 type creator. I think he's an all-rounder up there. And I just think they brought in players and they've been unlucky. I mean, their recruitment, they brought in Billy Gilmore, he was a good player and he can't break into the team. They've aired Laddows and Kabak in there who we were dying to keep. Dodge the bullet with him. And Rashica as well, who a lot of us were, you know, we'd have took him last year because we were linked with him. You know, we take anybody that we're linked with. And you go to Norwich and it's like, Jesus Christ, lads, what's going on here? It's, I don't know if they're going to, I can't see them getting many points, many wins, even with all the firepower they have. I just can't see it happening.
But look, Vieira is definitely my, Vieira is, I don't know what she was fucking doing that.
Pete's a brick, that's why.
All right. But anyway, Vieira, I think he's done really, really well so far. I think now, in fairness, I think they've drawn 6 of the games, lost 2, won 2. I think I could be right in saying that. But
you can see that about 4 last minute bleeding equal.
Yeah, but you know what? It's to get them from the type of football that Hodgson had them playing to what they're playing now, I think is night and day in a couple of months. I think it's a really, really good. And they're competing at the same time, because sometimes you change your style of play like that and you're getting whacked. But you're playing good football, and you're getting whacked up. But they're not. They're actually competing, and it looks good for them. And I think you should see them progress over the season and get better and better and see where they go from there. My losers of the week are Everton Football Club. I've been dying to do this one. because how they lost that game last night, only one goal was beyond me. It really is. It's it's scandalous what's going on there. Like, Matt Jones here says, Benitez isn't the right man, but he's nowhere near the biggest problem of the club. The owner, director of football, and these players have massively underperformed for years. Everything is rotten and needs gutting. I couldn't, like, everything get beaten, right? And how they're only beaten by one goal is beyond me, as I said. I'm just dying for the tipping point where they absolutely go for Benitez. Like, I thought Watford might be it, but they've held off. Wolves doesn't look like it'll be it. They might hold off. I'm just waiting for it. But do you know what? The biggest mistake they made this week was letting Dominic Calvert-Lewin go on Sky. And I'm not knocking Dominic Calvert-Lewin for going on Sky. You know, I've seen stuff like Gary Neville saying, fair play for going on, no script and stuff like that. Stop lying to us, Gary. We know you fucking rehearsed this show before it goes on. So there was definitely a script of some sort. And but to put him in there after, regardless whether Everton win, lose or draw, it's a weird one to do. And they're just so all over the fucking place, you know, and you're looking going, why is your number one striker who's injured having to field questions after that performance against Wolves? You know, it was just off the wall. So don't get me wrong, it's going to happen. They're going to absolutely turn on Benitez and decide that he's the absolute problem within, I would say, 4 to 6 weeks. And then, Jesus, like, there won't be enough popcorn in the world for when that starts. Do any of us disagree before we go?
No, I couldn't believe it was 15 minutes before the game and they were to do their pre-match interview on the pitch and Benitez was talking about the January transfer window before the match. couldn't get over it. Like, and of course, it's like Dave Jones, you all didn't pick it up because they were like, oh, we've got Dominic Calvert-Lewin here. Let's ask him about when he was 6 years old on trials. And we're like, it was just... like, I get that he wants money and again, he's going to start playing that game and maybe start going for time, but like, I thought he was a bit shrewder than that. Like, you know, it's like they were just asking him about injuries and the team sheet or whatever, and then he just said, like, we'll do what we can here. We've got players coming back and we'll see what we can do in the January transfer window. And I thought, oh my Christ, like, you know, get inside and get over to a tactics board or something. Like, you know, worry about that during the week.
Start telling Dave Jones at full time that he's at the writing down and out on his sideline, the pad saying, all that Christmas turkey for next week will be gone quick. Can't believe he was going on about bleeding January. That's just classic Rafa.
But that's a double edged thing that Rafa's doing there. So what he's doing there, he's basically telling the fans, look, we couldn't spend in the summer, and he's also telling the owners, this shit will continue unless you spend in January. Yeah. So he's covering his ass and he's throwing a thing out because Rafa does that. Like, he's a fucking madman. Like, he literally went from Hicks and Gillette at Liverpool. Right, he goes off and he does Real Madrid when they're an absolute basket case. He does Inter Milan, and then the top roll off, and you don't think he has enough. Come back and live in Kirby or wherever you're living, right? And relax, right? He says, "No, do you know what I'll do? I'll give Newcastle a ring and see what the fuck's going on up there." And he goes up and he perseveres with that lunatic up there. Like, he just doesn't give a shit. You know what I mean? And it's absolutely insane what's going on at Everton. They're definitely the losers of the week because, you know something, they get bashed at home, they go away, they get beaten, they let their striker go on and have to discuss that fucking stuff that's going on. Like, that just tops it for me, though. They're telling me and that he's talking about transfer windows.
The cherry on the top of all of that, or you're getting the extra point for this. Did you see what Amazon done?
No.
They moved the game from the 30th November to the 1st of December.
Yeah.
And the Everton fans went absolutely fucking rasher because we're going to be singing Merry Christmas Everton again when we beat them.
Because it's December.
And they were literally saying, the fans were like, they do this on purpose. It's always for them red shy. It's so they can sing that song against us. They moved to a day. This game's on the day before. Why are they doing this to us? It's just brilliant.
The meltdowns are the best. I have to say, the meltdowns are epic.
It's so good.
Big
it's
point so good. After last year, they derailed our season. So they'll be taking with us.
No, they're definitely the losers. Quick prediction for tomorrow because we forgot all about the Atletico Madrid match. But listen, the lads will be on tomorrow before the game and after the game. A preview of the game, a chat about it, lineups, news, ones to watch, predictions, and afterwards then with all the reaction. Prediction for the game. Go on, Keith. Liverpool v Atletico Madrid.
2-2.
Good stuff, Conan.
Oh, for fuck's sake, I thought I was coming in with a really clever 2-2. Like, yeah.
You can have it.
Yeah, I'm going to go with that as well.
Okay, well, I'm giving you the 2-2. Keith, I'm coming back to you because you can't pick the
same. All right, that's fair enough, yeah.
It was going to be a triple Desmond because I was going to go to Desmond too.
Hold on. 2-2. Colin, what do you want? 2-2. Keelan, coming back to you. I'm writing 3-0. You're definitely not thinking about this, aren't you? You're not giving any thought. The first two numbers come into your head and you just shout them at me. I like it.
An implosion by Atletico.
3-0. Shawnee, give us a thing. You can't have 2-2 and you can't have 3-0.
1-1.
1-1, okay. 3-1 to Liverpool is the correct score, just to let people know. Spoiler alert. Kev O'Sullivan says a 3-2 win. Ahmed Parmar has 2-2. Kevin Ball has 2-0 win if Thiago and Fabinho play. That's about it. They're reminiscing about goals now. Oh, the Jones goal in January, the Origi 90 plus 6 minute win at the 5-2, hilarious game. The Mane one. Yeah. The best thing about the Mane one is not the goal. It's Liverpool are bashing everything at Goodison 2016-17. Might be the following season. I'm not too sure. Years mean nothing to me now. And the board goes up. I think it goes up for 8 minutes. And you can hear the groan around Goodison going, oh, for fuck's sake. They know what's coming. And Sturridge just wanders across the pitch, hits a terrible shot that comes off the post, and Mane's all over it. So yeah, that's probably still my favourite over the Origi one. It probably is. But anyway, that is all the predictions and stuff. Rest of the week, as I said, we're covering the match tomorrow. Carnage on Thursday, Sports Unplugged on Friday, nothing on Saturday, three shows on Sunday, and then we'll be back into the start of the week, which is a international break.
Yeah,
so we've loads of quizzes and loads of drafts and stuff like that, where we have loads of fun for a week while the Liverpool lads are off playing for their countries. Don't forget Sienna Steps. Please don't forget Sienna Steps. She is heading off to New York, I think this time next week. She's heading off to New York, and we wish her all the best. She is going to pass 120k, but if you want to donate, the link is in the description, and you can donate to Sienna, and we're going to be absolutely thrilled when we get past that, which we will. The new show, the new channel, Man On Football Show, is link is in the description. Please subscribe, because that's going to be a proper laugh about football from all over the world. Keith is going to educate us on loads of stuff. Sean is going to educate us on loads of stuff. I'm going to drink cans and be educated while having a good time doing it. We're going to have guests on. We're going to have interviews. We're going to talk about football from all over the world. And we're going to have a good time doing it. The main thing is having a good time. So please, please, please go and subscribe to that new channel, which is in the description as well. And we're hoping next week to bring you out a show from the new channel, just to let you know what we're going to do and get suggestions off you as well. Conan, your podcast that we all love, tell them where they can find it before we get out of here.
I think you've heard enough Villa today, but
your podcast is Villa, but it's fucking great.
It's absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, it's brilliant. I love it.
Cheers, lads. We actually, I've sort of time coded it now, so it's called the Villa Podcast, and there's a section called Questions We Can't Answer, so that'll take you straight to the general stuff if you want to get through all the Villa stuff to start off with. So it's time coded in the description as well. So yeah, if you want to come, we use a slag in Harry Maguire and Solskjaer, so it's Liverpool people seem to like it.
Do you ever I've listened to a few. Do you ever have guests on?
One time we had somebody from the Anfield Rap. Sorry.
Yeah. Oh, no, they're good lads.
It was very early on. I don't know what it was for. I think they had done something around Dublin, some billboard campaign or whatever.
Oh, that's right, yeah, the Champions Billboard.
We were still trying to just figure out the format of it. Like, at the minute, we're just going after every Villa match, you know, so there's sort of talk of doing an extra one in the middle of the week then or whatever. So that's when we might start mixing up the format a bit then.
Basically, what I'm asking you is there room for people like us to come on and drink cans and talk football and definitely questions we can't answer stuff?
100%. But we have to extend it on if we're going to have Shawnee on, because I don't want to get into a Liverpool midfield again.
Yeah.
Debate on the
yeah. Yeah.
Don't worry, I'm normally not that nice. I'm not
I thought he was gonna say don't worry, I'm usually not as Sunday. I thought he was gonna say don't worry, I'm not usually as boisterous as that, which is a fucking lie. But it's been an absolute cracking show. So as I said, watch out for the rest of the content during the week. Don't forget to check out the Villa Podcast. You can find them on Twitter, and you'll find them anywhere you need to find them. But Twitter is where you'll find all the details. Anyway, the Villa Podcast. As I said, don't forget the show's out during the week. If anyone's in here, you're watching and you want to hit the like button, please do that. And if you're watching and you have some feedback, go into the comments after the show and leave us some feedback, good, bad, indifferent, ideas, wherever it might be, because the comments help in there. And if you're listening on the audio, wherever you're listening, on whatever app or whatever platform it might be, audio-wise, leave us a review. It's meant to be important as well. I keep getting told all these things, then I forget them, and then I get given out to you for not letting people know. That has been the Midweek Fix. It's been a cracker, in fairness. Peter Cech wears a skull cap in contract negotiations. Over and out. Sports Social Podcast Network.